All right, let's jump into this deep dive. We're tackling Jeremiah today.
The weeping prophet, right?
Yeah, but I think there's way more to him than just tears. I mean, this guy was dealing with some serious stuff. The Babylonian Empire was on the rise. And let's just say they weren't known for their hospitality.
Oh, yeah. They were about to turn the whole world upside down. And Jeremiah was right there in the middle of it.
Trying to warn everyone about what was coming.
Exactly. But here's the thing. To really get why his message was so, well, controversial, you got to understand the whole covenant idea. It's like, imagine a contract, but way more intense, between God and ancient Israel.
Okay, a cosmic contract. What happens if you break it? Asking for a friend, obviously.
Deuteronomy 28 spells it out, and let me tell you, it's not pretty.
Hit me with it.
Exile, destruction, the works, they call them covenant curses. Basically, if you mess up, there are going to be some serious consequences.
Like divine karma.
Yeah, something like that. And this wasn't just some abstract idea. Judah had already seen this play out with the Assyrian Empire. They'd conquered the northern kingdom of Israel about a century before Jeremiah's time.
So they knew what could happen if you broke the contract?
Oh, yeah. They had a front row seat to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's where those classical prophets come in. Guys like Isaiah, Amos, Hosea. They were basically trying to get Israel's attention, saying, hey, this isn't just politics. This is God acting.
So they saw Assyria as God's, what, like a divine wake-up call?
Exactly. But did they listen? Nope.
Humans, right? Always got to learn things the hard way.
So Assyria fades, Babylon steps up, and right in the middle of this power shift, boom, Jeremiah gets his prophetic calling. And get this, it's 626 BC. The same year Nabopolassar, the Babylonian king, comes to power.
Talk about timing, right? Like, cue the dramatic music.
Oh, and the drama definitely ramps up. The Babylonian conquest wasn't just a one-and-done thing. It was a whole series of invasions and exiles that just, like, kept coming. And each one was worse than the last.
So it's like a slow-motion train wreck.
Pretty much. They lose the Battle of Carchemish in 605 BC. Babylon takes out Egypt. They're the big dogs now, no question. And, oh yeah, guess who gets taken to Babylon in that first wave of exiles? Daniel.
Oh, wow, yeah. Talk about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's literally going to end up in the lion's den later on, right?
It's true, and you can see how smart the Babylonians were being. I mean, they took these bright young Judeans, like Daniel, and basically immersed them in Babylonian culture. It was all part of their strategy.
So they were playing the long game.
Absolutely. But even after that first defeat, Judah didn't get the message. King Jehoiakim, he tries to play both sides, rebelling against Babylon in 597. Bad move.
What happens?
Jerusalem gets captured again. And this time, Ezekiel's among those exiled.
So now you've got two major prophets, Jeremiah and Ezekiel, both dealing with this whole mess, but from different angles.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Jeremiah is watching the destruction up close and personal in Jerusalem, while Ezekiel's trying to figure it all out from exile.
And this isn't just some made-up story, right? We have records from the Babylonians themselves that back this all up.
Oh, yeah. The Babylonian Chronicles are pretty clear about the capture of Jerusalem. It all lines up with the biblical account.
Always cool when history and archaeology confirm what we read in the Bible. So what happens to Jerusalem after they capture it?
Well, Nebuchadnezzar, he doesn't completely destroy the city. Not yet, at least. He puts this guy, Zedekiah, in charge as a puppet king. Figured he could keep things somewhat under control that way.
But that puts Zedekiah in a tough spot, right? He's stuck between a rock and a hard place. Surrender to Babylon or fight back and risk total annihilation.
Exactly. And right there in the middle of it all is Jeremiah. And he's not mincing words.
Let me guess, he's saying surrender or die.
Pretty much. He's convinced this is God's judgment on Judah, pure and simple.
But I can see why people would be hesitant to surrender, right? I mean, that's your home, your country. It's not an easy decision.
Oh, for sure. And things get really heated. Those who wanted to fight back, they saw Jeremiah as a traitor. They actually threw him into a cistern to die.
Wow, seriously. They weren't messing around.
Nope. And what's crazy is that we have these ancient letters, the Leshish letters. They were written during the Babylonian siege, and they talk about this prophet predicting doom and gloom, officers trying to keep morale up, and this overwhelming sense of, like, impending doom.
So it's like a firsthand account of everything Jeremiah was talking about.
Exactly. And when you read them alongside the book of Jeremiah, it's chilling. It's like stepping back in time and feeling that tension, that fear, that uncertainty.
A whole nation on the brink of collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you wonder, what would I have done if I were in their shoes? Would I have listened to Jeremiah?
That's a good question. A really good question. And it's one we're going to keep exploring as we dive deeper into Jeremiah's message.
Okay, so we've got Jeremiah preaching surrender or die.
Oh.
But there's got to be more to it than that, right? I mean, he's not just some doomsayer.
Oh, absolutely not. Jeremiah's prophecies, they go way deeper than just fire and brimstone. He's trying to understand this whole crisis, like, on a spiritual level, wrestling with some pretty heavy stuff about God, about justice, about what happens to nations when they, you know, when they lose their way.
So, like, what was he saying about Babylon? I mean, they're the bad guys, right?
Oh, that's where it gets interesting. One of the most radical things Jeremiah says is that God is actually fighting with the Babylonians.
Well, hold on. You're saying the God who, like, parted the Red Sea and rescued them from Egypt is now on the other side?
That's exactly what he's saying. And you can imagine how that went over. I mean, people were freaking out. But Jeremiah, he's all about recognizing that God is in control. Even when it seems like everything's falling apart, he's using Babylon as a tool.
A tool. That's a pretty harsh tool.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like divine discipline. You know, he's trying to get Judah's attention and bring them back to him.
Tough love. Cosmic addition. But still, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around the idea that God would use like a brutal empire to get his point across.
It's definitely a tough one. And Jeremiah, he doesn't shy away from that. He even calls Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, a servant of God.
A servant? Like Moses was a servant of God, David was a servant of God, Nebuchadnezzar, the guy who's about to destroy everything.
Yeah, that's the point. Jeremiah is saying God can work through anyone, even through rulers who seem, you know, cruel and power hungry. Nebuchadnezzar is part of God's plan, even if it's a painful part.
Okay, but how long is this divine discipline gonna last? I mean, a whole generation uprooted, sent into exile. That's a pretty steep price to pay.
Jeremiah actually puts a number on it, 70 years.
70 years, that's a lifetime.
Exactly. He's saying this isn't a quick fix. True repentance, turning back to God, that takes time. It takes soul searching, facing the consequences.
And I bet that wasn't a popular message. I mean, there were probably other prophets around saying, don't worry, it'll all be over soon.
Oh, absolutely. There's always someone promising a quick and easy solution. But Jeremiah's not about that. He's saying, this is going to be tough, but it's necessary.
So, like, no pain, no gain, but for your soul.
Yeah, something like that. And it's a message that, you know, it still hits home today, don't you think? We want everything to be easy, instant gratification, but real change, real growth. That takes time. It takes work.
But what about the people who stayed behind in Judah? Do they get off scot-free?
That's where it gets even more interesting. Jeremiah has this vision, right? Two baskets of figs.
Okay, figs, I'm listening.
One basket, it's full of these ripe, juicy figs. The other one, rotten figs.
All right, I'm seeing where this is going. Good figs, bad figs. But what do they represent?
The good figs, those are the exiles. The ones everyone thinks are cursed, they're actually the ones who represent hope for the future.
Wait, so the people who got kicked out, they're the good ones.
Yeah.
And the people who stayed in Judah, they're the bad ones.
Yeah, it's kind of a mind-blowing concept. It's not about where you are physically, it's about your heart. The exiles, they were forced to confront their brokenness, their need for God. They're the ones who are ready for change.
So even in the middle of all this disaster, Jeremiah is saying there's still hope, but it's going to come from an unexpected place.
Exactly. And he doesn't let Babylon off the hook either. He makes it very clear that they'll answer for their actions too. I mean, they might be God's tool, but they're still responsible.
So it's like nobody gets away with anything forever.
Right. And that brings us to 586 BC, the big one, the fall of Jerusalem.
Oh.
Zedekiah, he ignores Jeremiah's warnings, rebels against Babylon, and it's a disaster. The city's besieged, the temple's destroyed, and everyone who's left is sent into exile. It's like the final curtain falling on this whole tragedy.
In Zedekiah.
Yeah, they capture him, kill his sons right in front of him, blind him, take him back to Babylon as a prisoner.
Man, that's brutal. What about Jeremiah? What happened to him?
Well, the Babylonians, they actually give him a choice. They realize he was telling everyone to surrender all along, so they let him out of prison. He can go to Babylon if he wants, or he can stay in Judah.
What a weird twist. So what does he do?
Jeremiah, he chooses to stay with the people who are left. He could have gone to Babylon, probably had a pretty comfortable life, but he decides to stay and help those who are hurting, those who've lost everything.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, after all he's been through, he still cares about these people.
It shows you what kind of guy he was. But his story, well, it doesn't end there.
So Jeremiah's back in Judah. What happens next? I mean, it feels like things can't get much worse.
Well, buckle up. It's Jeremiah, remember. Things rarely go smoothly for this guy. The Babylonians, they appointed this Judean, Gedaliah, to kind of run things after the conquest.
Right, trying to restore some order out of the chaos.
Exactly. But Gedaliah, he gets assassinated. And it throws everything into a tailspin. People are scared. They don't know what to do.
So they turn to Jeremiah for guidance.
You'd think, right. But nope. They actually end up, they kidnap him.
Kidnap him. Seriously.
Yeah, and they drag him off to Egypt.
So much for staying in Judah. He ends up in exile anyway. Talk about adding insult to injury.
It's kind of a sad ending to his story. No peaceful retirement for Jeremiah. Instead, he's stuck in Egypt, surrounded by people who probably don't want to hear what he has to say.
It makes you wonder, like, what kept him going? I mean, this guy faced so much opposition, so much hardship. What's the takeaway from a life like that?
That's the question that keeps coming back to me. And I think what's so powerful about Jeremiah's story is that it's not just about, you know, ancient history. It's about faith. It's about obedience. It's about doing what's right, even when it's hard, even when it costs you everything.
One thing that really stuck with me was that whole idea of consequences.
Yeah.
We see it in Deuteronomy, right? That list of blessings and curses. And then we see it play out in real time as Judah faces the music.
Yeah, it's like a cosmic cause and effect. You can't just break the contract, as you called it, and expect to get away with it.
But it's not just about punishment.
Right.
Jeremiah talks about repentance, too, about the possibility of turning things around. He never gives up hope.
Exactly. And that's where the image of the good figs and the bad figs comes in. It's not about who's good or bad, but who's willing to change, who's willing to let God work in their lives, even if it means going through some tough stuff.
So even when it seems like all hope is lost, there's still a chance to start over.
That's what Jeremiah is saying. And that's what makes his story so relevant even today. I mean, we all mess up. We all make bad choices. But there's always a way back.
But it might not be easy, right?
No, it probably won't be. But it'll be worth it. And that brings us back to Jeremiah. I mean, think about this guy. He was constantly speaking truth to power, even when it put him in danger. He didn't try to sugarcoat anything. He stayed true to what he believed.
That's got to take some serious guts. It makes you think about the areas in your own life where you might be tempted to compromise, where you might be taking the easy way out. What would it look like to stand up for what you believe in, like Jeremiah did?
It's a challenge, for sure, but it's a challenge worth taking on. And maybe the most important thing Jeremiah teaches us is about the sovereignty of God. Throughout his whole ministry, he's emphasizing that God is in control, even when it doesn't seem like it.
So even when things are falling apart, there's a bigger plan at work.
Exactly. And that's something we can hold on to even when we're facing our own Babylonian crises, whether it's personal struggles, global pandemics, whatever. Jeremiah's story reminds us that we're not alone and that even in the midst of exile, even in the midst of brokenness, God is still with us.
That's a pretty powerful message to end on. So as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of Jeremiah, I'm left thinking, what are the rotten figs in my own life? What are the things that are holding me back from experiencing God's fullness? And what would it look like to embrace change, even if it's uncomfortable? It's something I'm going to keep chewing on, and I hope you will too. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and until next time, keep seeking truth, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.